I recently came to visit Los Angeles, and I called up my dear friend, Sonari Glinton.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Sonari, you are an NPR business correspondent, and you live out here in LA. And we were going to get some food, and you told me that you were going to take me to see one of your favorite places in LA.
Yeah, where you can see the most celebrities in one, like, place possible.
And I was thinking this meant we were going to go to some cool new restaurant or a club or something like that.
Nope.
But that is not where we ended up. Where are we right now?
We are in a little park that's hidden right off of Wilshire Boulevard, which is one of the busiest streets in LA. And you can see there are skyscrapers sort of hiding what is one of my favorite places in the world.
And what is it?
This is Pierce Brothers Westwood Memorial Park.
It is a cemetery.
It is a cemetery, for real, for real.
Sonari, you brought me to a cemetery. You really know how to show a girl a good time.
Well, I tell you, you know what? It's always a surprise. It is always a surprise. No one ever is like, oh, you took me to a cemetery. But, Stacey, this cemetery is special.
Yeah, let's walk around.
So, what you got? You got first stop here. One of my favorite actors, Jack Lemmon.
Why does it say Jack Lemmon in?
Because that's where he is. Like, get it in.
Oh.
Like, he ain't never going out of there. Like, he's in. He's in. He's definitely
like,
in.
I'm in. Wait.
Just moving quickly. There's somebody in there, but we
I've never... You're so excited.
Oh,
I've,
yeah. Here is the great writer, Truman Capote. Jackie Collins.
Oh, Natalie Wood.
But there is one celebrity that kind of outshines everyone.
Like walking towards the mausoleum.
And we turn the corner and there's always some activity around it. There are always people. There's always flowers. There's always something.
Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
Marilyn Monroe's grave is very simple. It almost couldn't be more simple, except for all the kiss marks. Marilyn's grave is covered in these lipstick kisses. Apparently, people come up and kiss her grave every day. There was also a bouquet of roses, a pair of sunglasses, and a piece of lemon cake that somebody left there. But, Sonari, you did not want to linger at Marilyn. You wanted to take me to see someone else.
Yes, one of my favorite, absolute favorite people is buried there. And there's a little ritual that I have to perform. We have to find a stone or here. So we're going to show some respect to one of my favorite comedians. This man was Jewish. This is a tradition, Stacey, where you place a stone on a Jewish person's grave as a sign of remembrance. For Rodney Dangerfield. And you have to read his tombstone while I place this stone here.
His inscription is, "There goes the neighborhood."
Yeah. It's like,
Rodney Dangerfield was not kidding. This is a very exclusive neighborhood.
It's one of the most expensive graveyards in the world. One plot costs hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And that is for a space that is 6 feet by 8 feet.
Yeah, by that measure, that makes it some of the most expensive real estate in the world. Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Sonari Glinton.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Death, the great mystery. It connects and unites us all. It has inspired some of the greatest works of art and literature, and in a lot of ways, it defines and shapes our lives.
But it is also a business.
And wait, how much did you say the average funeral costs now?
It's over $10,000 for a traditional burial.
Wow. It's expensive to die.
It is expensive to die.
Today on the show, we look at three different parts of the death business.
Because as Rodney Dangerfield would tell you, dying ain't fun, and it ain't cheap either.
Support for Planet Money and the following message come from Betterment. They want to know, are you getting as much as you can from your investments? Betterment is the largest independent online financial advisor, and they now offer a free investment review, which helps you assess your investment accounts, tax strategies, fees, and risk exposure. See what you're doing well and how you could improve with Betterment. No sign-up required. Visit betterment.com/planetmoney to start your free 5-minute investment review today.
For our first story, we're going to look at buying a cemetery plot. And Sonari, because you love the Westwood Cemetery so much, I looked around and found the guy who could sell you a space there.
Oh, woohoo.
Hi, my name is Baron Chu with Plot Brokers.
So you're basically like a real estate agent for grave plots?
It's very similar, yes.
Baron buys cemetery plots from people. They move or change their mind about where they want to be buried. And the spot he has in your cemetery, Sonari, it's actually two spots. It is a double plot right in the middle of all those celebrities. And it costs, get ready for it, $600,000.
oh my, that is a lot of money. This guy, get his friends together, they can probably have a reality show. Crypts and Mausoleums of the Rich and Famous, maybe.
I would watch that show. Barron's family has been in this business for more than 80 years. He says it is a very solid business. Demand is stable, and there's a lot of money involved. Barron's most expensive property right now is a crypt that is going for more than $1 million. What are the amenities that it offers? Like, why does it cost so much?
Private entrance, one of a kind, 18-foot ceilings, marble from floor to ceiling, family name as big as a freeway sign.
Stacy, in Hollywood, even in death, billing, still important.
Always.
But this cemetery, it's already at 95% capacity, so it's really expensive and really hard to get in.
And Barron says in cities like Los Angeles and New York, businesses like his are always booming. I mean, these cities are growing, populations are getting bigger, cemeteries are filling up, and more people are coming to him asking for help finding space.
And cemetery real estate is different from, say, home real estate in one very big way. You never move.
Thanks, Sonari.
You are welcome. Bye.
So you have your cemetery plot, but when are you going to need it? That question brings us to our second story, because none of us knows when we are going to die, and this causes all kinds of problems. Existential, of course, but also practical. For instance, it's hard to know how much money you need to save. You don't want to scrimp and scrimp your whole life only to die before you've had a chance to spend any of it. You also don't want to spend and spend and then live to be 112. So these days, we have things like 401ks and life insurance to help us out with these problems. But that was not always the case. And Brian Erstadt, editor of Planet Money, you have a tale for us.
I have a tale and a plan, a strange old plan.
Tell us about it.
Planet Money, the 10 of us, we each pony up $1,000.
That's a lot.
It's enough. We bury it in the park and we wait. And after everyone but one of us has died...
That
person, hopefully me, you.
Uh-huh. Hopefully me.
Hopefully sure. Me or you, one of us gets all of the money.
Okay, so this idea of yours just sounds like a messed up lottery.
It is, but it's actually a kind of deal that went on for centuries, and it is called a tontine.
A tontine?
A tontine. It was invented by a man named Lorenzo de Tonti.
Oh, Tontine.
Exactly.
Got it.
And this is how he set it up.
Okay.
He wanted the money to go to the government, and he said... Listen, Planet Money investors, don't bury it in the park. Give it to me, give it to the government, and we will pay you an interest payment once a year. And as the investors in the tontine die off, the interest payments get bigger for the remaining investors.
Oh.
So this way, you and I would get a regular payment, and even if everyone else was gone, we would be getting money.
So if Jacob Goldstein mysteriously disappears...
Let's say...
For instance, we would get a little extra money.
We would get a little extra money.
Was this popular? Were there a lot of these?
They were all over the place. And one of them for a while was the building that housed the New York Stock Exchange. It was
really?
Yeah, it was founded around 1794 by 200 people who got together and said, let's each put in $200. We'll build a building. We'll run it. And the survivor will own it. And when it shut down, it was a big deal. And everybody was like, the tontine is over. The famous tontine is over.
Who won? Who got the building?
It was somebody with a very fancy old New York name.
Oh, of course.
The people who always win.
So, okay, these were apparently huge, but I don't know. What happened to them? Are there still tontines today?
Well, there were... No, there were some problems. What happened was the insurance companies got into the business, and they started offering tontines in a kind of professional way, and people joined up, and there was all this invested money sitting in piles. And people didn't really do that good a job taking care of it. And
it's tempting. There's the whole pile of
money. It was a little too tempting. And some people lived a long time and found out at the last moment, if you know what I mean, that someone had run off with all the money.
Oh.
So tontines became essentially illegal.
But you're hoping to bring them back a Planet Money.
Think about it this way. It's kind of a nice thing. Like, it's something you do with someone you trust. And you kind of make an agreement that, in a way, is good for everyone. And it's, I think there's a kind of sweetness to it.
Thank you, Brian.
You're welcome.
Our third and final business of death story comes to us from overseas. Sally Helm, Planet Money producer, hello.
Hello.
You have the story for us.
Yes, we are going to Japan. And Japan is a really good place to talk about death because it is one of the fastest aging societies in the world right now. I talked to Elise Hugh about this. She covers Japan for NPR, and she was like, oh, yeah.
There's a lot of old people in Japan, and it's noticeable when you walk around, especially rural areas.
So what does that mean for the funeral industry?
Well, you would think it would be a good thing, right? You would
yeah.
think that that would be the kind of intuitive response. But what's happening is that there's kind of a larger trend against spending as much money on funerals and having smaller funerals.
There are a couple reasons for that trend. One kind of sad one is that if you die older, you have fewer friends around to come to your funeral. So what's happening in Japan is that on the one hand, there are more funerals, but on the other hand, people are spending less on each one. So the funeral and death business in Japan has gotten really, really competitive. And there have been these big expos where death businesses come together to basically show their stuff, show why people should choose them. And Elise went to one of those conventions.
It's called ENDEX. It's short for End of Life Expo.
Nice.
And it's a gathering of all end of life related businesses. So coffin builders, altar makers, morticians. There was an entire section on pets.
Turn your pet remains into a memory sapphire.
There were a bunch of hearses on display. There was this real blinged out hearse, for example. Why would you need a party bus after death?
Now, Stacey, Elise did not just go to this expo. She actually participated in it. There was a mortician there who wanted to show off his skills in traditional Japanese burial practices, and Elise agreed to be his model.
Oh my God.
The big climax for me at ENDEX was an opportunity to actually have an undertaker
I'm kinda nervous.
Pretend okay. that I was dead and dress me in the traditional funeral garb and put me in
dead.
A coffin.
Elise said the undertaker wrapped her in a kimono, left side over right side, the way he would do it for the dead, and applied makeup. And all of this was in front of a big audience.
There's a real ritual to all of this. And so while I was pretending to be dead and getting prepared for my coffin, this undertaker was also on display, right? We were on stage. And so there was somebody narrating what he was doing as we were doing this.
Elise said the undertaker was very gentle. It seemed like he really knew what he was doing.
When we were all finished, there was applause, you know, for the ritual mortician.
I have a photo of this in front of me, and it's amazing. Elise has on makeup. She's in this coffin that has clouds on it. And, you know, if death is a business, in this case, Elise became the product. And she told me that the experience wasn't really spiritual for her. If she was in touch with anything larger than herself, it was the commercial side of death, which ultimately unites us all.
That is so true. Stick around after the credits. The show is not dead yet. We have one final thought after this.
Support for Planet Money and the following message come from Wonder Capital, allowing individuals to invest in solar energy projects. Earn up to 7.5% annually while diversifying your portfolio. Create an account for free at wondercapital.com/planetmoney.
We love to hear what you think of the show, and we really love to get your story ideas. So send us an email, planetmoney@npr.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.
Today's episode was produced by the great Nick Fountain and Sally Helm. And also, we have a couple people we'd like to thank, Professor Jonathan Foreman at the University of Oklahoma and Amber Carvalho with Undertaking LA. Thanks, guys.
Also, if you want to see some pictures of Elise in her coffin, those will be up on our website, npr.org/money. And there will actually be video of this whole thing for Elise's Elise Tries series on NPR. It's an awesome series. Definitely check that out.
Planet Money's senior producer is Alex Goldmark. The show is edited by Bryant Erstad. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith.
And I'm Sally Helm. Thanks for listening. Stacey, I have one last person that I want you to meet.
Okay.
Yeah, he's not around. Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Hi. So, sorry, he's not around?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm talking about a dead person. Who's this?
This is Sally.
Oh, hi.
I hate it when that happens.
Daisy, this is Mike McHugh. He is a cemetery commissioner in a small town in Massachusetts. So he runs the municipal cemeteries. He keeps track of who's buried where. He spends a lot of time with grieving families.
So he's really dealing with a lot of different sort of logistical aspects of death.
Yes, the really practical parts in this small town. And he's been doing it since he was 18 years old.
Wow.
So I thought he would be the perfect person to ask this question that, for me, has been kind of hanging over the whole show, which is, if you're dealing with death in this practical way, does that make it easier for you to deal with your own mortality? So I asked him, do you feel like you've learned things about death that you didn't know?
I've learned a lot of the technical aspects of it. So I didn't realize, say, that a casket goes inside of a vault, and when it goes in the ground, I thought they just went straight into the ground themselves. And
do you think, I mean, like, has it changed how you, like, think about death, do you think?
No, I'm still terrified. I'm still terrified of it as I was before.
So I guess no matter how often you deal with death or however many of the practical parts of death you're dealing with every day, it's still just the great existential question.
Yeah, I think that never goes away.